Absolutely.
All right. Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a native of Atlanta, Georgia, and a graduate of Morehouse College with an ABA in Banking and Finance. In addition to appearing as Harpo in the First National Tour, as we said earlier, of Oprah Winfrey's The Color Purple, and as Benny and Rent on Broadway, he also appeared in such regional productions as Smokey Joe's Cafe at the Pasadena Playhouse, Who Do Love at the Mo'elelo
in San Diego, yes. Mo'elelo. Sixth Street Theater, yeah.
I didn't quite have the accent right, but yes, Mo'elelo. Performing Arts Theater in San Diego, my hometown. Ain't Misbehavin' in Orlando, Florida. Once on This Island at DeKalb
Music Theater. Years ago.
And Cotton Patch Gospel at the Distinguished Alliance Theater Company in Atlanta, Georgia.
His film work has included Dirty Beautiful for True Light Pictures, Truth Be Told, Bill Condon's Dream Girls, and Downtown, a Street Tale, as well as Golden Inheritance, currently in production. Television audiences know him from such episodic programs as The Neighbors, Modern Family, Happy Endings, All My Children, General Hospital, and several commercials for such corporate entities as Applebee's, AT&T, Hyundai Sonata, IHOP, the Georgia Lottery, Cost Cutters, and Band Roll On.
Band Roll On doesn't exist.
And you know when you, do a commercial for Band Roll On, you've done it all.
That's great.
But he's here today, ladies and gentlemen, to talk about his starring role as entrepreneur and music mogul John Dolphin in the celebratory return of Recorded in Hollywood, currently on stage through August 7th at the Kirk Douglas Theater in Culver City. Put your hands together for Stu James.
Love that we have an audience
Welcome here. Thank you.
Nothing like a live studio audience, I tell you.
You know, Michael, I always like it whenever you can book guests with the last name James. It just makes me feel good to know there's other James out there.
That's right. Thank you for having me so much.
Thanks for being here, Stu.
Yes. Stu, how much fun are you having doing this piece? This is not the first time you've done it, because it was here last season in a 99-seat equity waiver kind of way, and now it's been bumped up to the big time.
Wow. You know, I'm enjoying originating a role, being able to put my stamp on it and create it and put my energy into it. And the cast is amazing. The creative team, the director, Denise Dow, she is amazing. The entire cast, our musical director, Abdul Hamid Royale, Robinson Royale is amazing. Lou, our producer we've got on board, Lou Spitzow is amazing, and Victoria and Raquel as well. And, you know, it's fun because I like the people that I work with. So everybody comes in and they work hard and we create and we play and we find it.
That's great.
Yeah, so we can honor this man and tell his story. I kind of call him a lost unsung hero. You know, why don't people know about his story?
Right.
Because I didn't know about it until I started working on it.
Yeah. And I'm sure most people don't either.
I think that's true.
A piece of Hollywood history. Yeah. We have a recording that was written about him.
Yes.
And which is sung in the production, but not by you.
Not this version. It was before.
Right.
But this version, it's a newer version. It's expanded, deeper relationships. I'm telling you, really, really invested. So no, not this time.
All right.
Yeah.
Let me take a listen to that.
Loving John is one guy you got to see. Loving John is just as happy as can be. If you haven't met him yet, boy, you sure have missed a bet. You better dig him. Loving John. Loving John. He's the toast of the coast. Loving John. That's why the people's gather most. He'll make you forget your troubles. Your words will go up in bubbles. You better dig him. Loving John. You'll see a jolly smiling face when you stroll into his place on Vernon at 1065. He'll be so glad to meet you. With open arms he'll greet you. Man, you feel glad to be alive. And that's no jive. Loving John. A better friend you'll never find. Loving John will always be a friend of mine. If you haven't dug him yet, boy, you sure have missed a bet. You better dig him. A Loving John. Thank you. smiling face when you stroll into his place on Vernon at 1065. He'll be so glad to meet you. With open arms, he'll greet you. And man, you'd feel glad to be alive. And that's no jive, Kevin John. A better friend you'll never find. Kevin John will always be a friend of mine. If you haven't dug him yet, boy, you sure have missed a bet. You better pick up on a Lovin' John. Pick up on a Lovin' John.
What a great piece.
Isn't that a great piece?
I could play that music. We're going to change the format here on State of the Arts. We're going to play music all the time.
Woo,
it's fantastic.
Sweet soul music. My goodness. Oh, jazz.
How cool to have a song written about you, huh?
Nope.
Yeah,
right?
Really.
So exactly. Tell us about this, man.
John Dolphin, a.k.a. Loving John. Wow, he was born in like 1902, April 2nd, Aries, so fire sign, so very determined and driven. He was 10 years before Berry Gordy.
Mm-hmm.
So he pretty much he grew up in Beatrice, Alabama, spent time in Boley, Oklahoma, his childhood. Then he moved to Detroit, worked in the auto industry for a while, started promoting concerts and built a name for himself promoting concerts and found that music could be profitable. So he left Detroit and he came out to L.A. He was a Pullman porter prior to that as well. So he worked for Ford Motor Company, was a Pullman porter, studied law. He did a few things before actually getting to L.A. Wow. In like the late 40s and 48. And he just fell in love with music. And he was a big dreamer, a go-getter. I call him kind of a Renaissance man because I felt like John was ahead of his time. He saw the vision in his record shop on Vernon and Central. Big glass window. Hired a white DJ sitting in front of the window. Huggy Boy. You know,
that was
DJ there. Hunter Hancock was a major DJ, a black DJ there as well. But just having that vision at that time. So you walk by, big glass window, people see a white DJ spinning music, interviewing Sam Cooke or Sarah Vaughan or, you know, Jesse Belvin and the Flames, you know, all those groups that he influenced at that time, and he moved their careers forward. Etta James, all these people. And he had a big vision, and he was so determined to get it done. That's what I really connect with him about.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, visually, if you see him, we kind of resemble. Thought that was a little spooky.
Interesting.
Kind of resembled each other a little bit.
Really?
And I kind of believe when there are live souls, they kind of choose you to tell their story.
Yeah.
So I felt like he's, to some point, kind of chosen me. I guess, because to be honest with you, first time it came around, I said, no, I don't have time. And then it came back. I'm like, so, okay, let's be open to this.
The right opportunities come around again.
Right. So be open. It's presented itself again. But this man paved the way for people, for music to, African-American music to cross over onto mainstream stations. He influenced, like I said, Sam Cooke's career. He taught his artists about, about negotiating your residuals at that time, holding on to record contracts. Because back in those days, artists just got paid for record. And as far as the residual money, it was nothing. They just didn't get it. It's hard to get it these days. So imagine how difficult it was back then.
Right.
But he educated, artists like Sam Cooke and Jesse Belvin about that thing. He said, at least ask for your publishing rights. That's what it would be called. And, he was influential in opening the doors for African-American artists to be played on African-American stations as well as crossing over to mainstream stations.
Wow.
And, like I said, Jesse Belvin, Sam Cooke, Sarah Vaughan, influential in their careers, had impacts with Elvis Presley. They had a relationship as well.
Wow.
Elvis would visit his shop.
I've heard of Elvis.
Yeah, on Central and Vernon.
Well, he had so much tenacity, and even with the record store, which when he realized it, it says here in the press notes, that when he realized that no one was going to let him open his store on an all-white Hollywood boulevard, he brought Hollywood to Central.
He brought it to Central.
Wow.
Exactly. Yeah. Initially, he tried to open it in Hollywood back in the late 40s, and he thought that he would be able to.
Right.
That's how much of a you know, bright eyed.
Dreamer, yeah.
He was great.
But he was very smart by naming it Dolphins of Hollywood.
Dolphins of Hollywood.
That's fantastic.
He says, I'm going to keep the name anyway. And took it down to, you know, Central and Vernon on the south side.
Exactly.
Wow. But it didn't matter. Yeah. Everybody came to the shop. And one awesome thing about it is that John coined that phrase, buy one, get one free.
Really?
Because you would come in and buy a record, and the extra record you would get residuals. Free. Right?
If only there were a residual.
Right, right.
I wonder if BOGO pays him residuals. Yeah, that's exactly that's what it should
be. How awesome would,
right.
if that would have been, right?
How funny. Yeah.
But he would actually put one of his artist records in it. So you buy a Nat King Cole record.
Oh, fantastic.
And you get one of his artists, a Jesse Belvin or someone else not as popular.
Wow.
But then you end up knowing about the artist, so people
very
come down.
Smart.
And they want to buy that record. And they play it over and over and over on the radio.
Wow.
And the store was open. Eventually got to a place where it was open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, even on Sundays. Mm-hmm. So this man was around the clock. Very profitable. He was very significant, integral in integrating the West Coast, because everybody was coming down to Dolphins of Hollywood, open 24 hours, 7 days a week, black, white, Latin, Filipino, Korean. It didn't matter.
It's fantastic.
All the time.
Yeah.
And the challenge, though, that you'll see the conflict, and I don't want to kind of give it all away. I want you to come see the show.
Don't give it away.
But I won't give it away. But you'll see some of the conflict that exists when you come, kind of some parallels that are going on right now. But, you know, and back at that time when you're an African-American man making all that money and you're integrating the city, which they kind of didn't want at that time, you know, so there was some police harassment that was involved as well. So now how interesting in our first preview that a Friday ago in the same situation happened in Dallas. I'm like, wow, is this crazy? I didn't know about it until I had gotten home. Mm-hmm. But some of those parallels are there, too, so... That's kind of some of the reality part.
You know, I think you're right. The story needs to be told. I mean, he was so influential, and in the research that I was doing on him, I mean, you realize how many lives he touched, not only through recordings, but personally, get out there and beat in the pavement and meet and greet people. He touched lives of people who went on to change the industry as well. What kind of music did you grow up on, Stu?
My father was a classically trained musician, so he played a lot of classical stuff around the house.
Long-haired stuff, huh?
Yeah, Beethoven and stuff like that. But you know what? My mom, she would listen to the R&B stuff. So, some of the, I guess, you know, the Spinners and the OJs and Donny Hathaway, Stevie Wonder, Roberta Flack, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Carole King, all that stuff was played in the house. So, yeah, pop. Rock, I guess pop, R&B, and rock back then. Yeah.
So important to get your early musical influence.
And gospel, too. A lot of gospel in the house.
Yeah.
Did you see the recent U.S. tour swinging through here of Carole King's Beautiful?
You know, I missed it. We were in rehearsal.
Rehearsal, probably. Yeah, it was fantastic.
I heard it was amazing.
Yeah, it was such an interesting story about her life. I had no idea that she went through what she went through.
Right.
I mean, for nothing like this gentleman, but certainly her in her own way. You know, with her husband, who was not faithful to her during their marriage, and, you know, devastating as that is for any woman or anybody,
right?
Period. But she certainly came through. And, boy, did she write songs that I actually forgot that she wrote.
Yeah.
You know, she wrote so many for everybody.
She's amazing. An amazing songwriter.
Yeah.
Yes.
But if you get a chance to see that show, if it ever comes back,
I'd
go see it for sure.
Is it on Broadway anymore? I think it's...
It is just closing on
just
Broadway.
Just closing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the sister of the young lady that created the role on Broadway is
touring.
Is touring.
That's what I heard. Okay.
And awesome. She is amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. So... I love this idea. This kind of, you know, plays into this whole thing that we're talking about here with your show, also into a movie that you did, Dreamgirls, that same kind of subject matter.
You know what? How interesting it does have that feel.
Yeah.
I guess John, to a certain point, would be the Curtis in that show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those parallels, different time period, like I said, paving the way. All that.
It's almost like step one and then step two. I mean, it's a progression when you look at those two stories. One was the absolute instigator. Somebody came out and did something nobody else was doing, but the next took it to another level.
I mean,
really interesting. They can't work without the other. You got to have both.
It's the truth. You're right.
You're right. We're talking, of course, today about Recorded in Hollywood with Stu James, one of the stars of this new show. Press opening was July 16th, and it continues through August 7th. And that's Thursdays and Fridays at 8 p.m., Saturdays at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. And you can get tickets, of course, by calling 213-972-4488. And you can also, of course, visit the Kirk Douglas Theater website or www.recordedinhollywood.com. Tickets range from $39 to $59.
Which is still a bargain, right?
Absolutely. For a show like this?
For a show like this, absolutely.
I mean, when you hear that music, I mean, you're realizing you're getting a story, but you're getting a concert.
You're getting some good stuff. You're getting some original tunes. I think there are like 16 new original tunes, and you're getting some of the cover tunes.
Yeah.
Like that Earth Angel and some of the other Sam Cooke songs that were instrumental, you know, because actually Earth Angel was a song that was premiered at Dolphins. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have someone in common that Stu and I know by the name of Catherine Washington, who is really a very elegant young woman who's in the show. And is the first time you've worked with her?
Yes, doing this show. I love working with Catherine. She's fully committed. She comes in, she plays, she finds it, and she makes it work. Yeah. Love it. She's a doll.
Yes, she is. She did a musical here the first time. Tarzan, the Disney musical, was done live. She was one of the. She was the
mother.
The mother.
Okay. Was that at 3D?
No, not at 3D. It was actually done here at the El Portal Theater in North Hollywood,
right.
And she did an amazing job with that.
She's a smart girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a heavy role for her, but boy, did she pull it off. And she was, of course, one of our alumni in LA's Next Ray Stage.
Oh, fantastic.
Ago,
so lots of good talents came out of there.
We love Catherine. Who among Matt Magnuson also has quite a career.
Matt's awesome. He plays Huggy Boy.
Yes.
Smooth and charming and funny.
Which is a DJ.
Yeah, he's a DJ.
Yeah.
Yes. DJ with a lot of soul.
You've got a lot of people in your show.
Yeah.
How big is this cast?
Ooh, 21. I think it's 21 of us total, yeah.
Sweet. How did you ever get into this business? When did you know that you wanted to do this?
God, man. I used to, my degree is in banking and finance. I used to be a stockbroker. I used to sell stocks
and
bonds.
Hated it. Business.
Hated it. But no, seriously, you know, it was passion for me.
Right.
So my bank was bought out by another bank. I was intern with the bank when I was in college. They offered me a full time job after I finished. I did the management training program for a year, worked for a bank for like I think it was 5-6 years out of college. Mm-hmm. They were bought out by Bank of America, bought out Nations Bank. They gave us all severance packages. So the universe pushed me out. It's like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Right, but you went and pursued your dream.
I went and pursued the dream.
That's fantastic.
And I have been working and being able to save and provide a living ever since.
I love that story.
So I truly believe do what you love, the money will follow. I think it's a book as well. But that's been my experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe in the starving artist syndrome. It doesn't have to exist, you know.
I enjoy napping. Does that?
I like napping. Naps are good. Naps are good, man.
As long as you're passionate.
Passionate. I reach for the naps. But yeah, the universe pushed me out, so I had no choice. It's either that or go sit behind a desk and crunch numbers.
Ugh.
I think the blessing for me is that once I'm in this business, though, at least I know how to save and invest and kind of put the money to the side and make it work, you know.
But Stu, don't you feel too that having that real world experience before you go pursue your dreams of saying, look, this is what hard work is, and to do what you love, you can put so much more into it. I feel that's so important for performers to get. And I meet people who've never had a quote unquote real job.
Right.
And you go, man, you got to understand how people are living to realize how lucky we are to do what we do.
It's awesome to be able to get up and love
what
you do and make money at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in the South. I didn't really think I could do this until I, you know, moved out and started working in New York and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was told go to college, get an education, get a job.
Which isn't bad advice, of course.
It's not bad advice. I mean, but it's nothing like going to school, get a job that you love to do.
Right.
Right.
Versus, you know, moping in there every morning, you know, not as excited. So I think it's important to value that. Like you said, we get to do that, which is a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
And don't take it for granted. Mm-hmm. So when we're working and making all that, you know, some good money, you know, put something to the side for that rainy day.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
Okay. I think we need to address the live arts calendar,
mm-hmm.
right? Do you want to start off with your review, or would you rather say that on the other side?
Let's talk about Little Mermaid.
Okay.